This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
And now here is our interview with the late and great Hall of Famer, Mickey Mantle.
Nice to have Mickey Mantle with us. 18 seasons with the Yankees. He played in those 12 World Series and has co-authored the book, All My Octobers, My Memories of 12 World Series When the Yankees Ruled Baseball. And Mickey, good evening. Nice to have you with us here on Sports Byline.
Thank you, Ron.
You know, I was reflecting this afternoon, Mickey, on the fact that back in the 50s, when you take a look at New York and New York baseball, you had the Giants, you had the Dodgers, and you had the Yankees. And I've talked to a lot of people that referred to that as kind of the golden age of baseball. That was a special time in that city for baseball, wasn't it?
Well, it's when I went up in 1950. Well, Willie came up in 51, too. So we both came up, and Duke was already there. And to me, it was the golden age. I'm not saying that it really was. I mean, I don't have the right to say that. But to me, it was my golden age, yeah.
When you take a look at the Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Giants, the fans were either Yankee fans, Dodger fans, or Giants fans. They didn't cross over, did they?
You mean up there in New York?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. If you lived in Brooklyn, you was a Dodger. If you lived in the Bronx, you was a Yankee, and then the Giants.
Mays told me a story one time, Mickey. He said when he came up with the Giants, he said he had this little room just astride of a grocery store, and he said the day before they used to always play the Dodgers, he would come home, and there'd be a lot of people around the grocery store, and he said he'd go upstairs and then kind of peer out the window because he didn't understand it, and he said when he'd look out the window, they were gone. So he came back into the clubhouse, and being a rookie player, a young player, he'd ask some of the players what that was all about, and they just started laughing. He says, can't you figure that out? He says, that's all the Dodger fans or the Giants fans who want to know what time you got in so they knew how to bet on the game the next day.
Well, they would have had to stand around the St. Moritz Hotel to catch me.
Tell me a little bit, if you will, about the book, because you do lament in some ways some of the losses, and you also share some of the victories of the 12 World Series that you played in. Was this a joy to write this book about the World Series?
Mickey Herskowitz, who wrote it, knew a little bit more about it than I did. Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed going back, like remembering things, you know, like in, I think, 1952. Well, in 51, we played the Giants. That's how I hurt my knee. That was gave me trouble all my life. Willie Mays hit a pop fly to right center, and I was playing right field, and Casey had told me before the game that Joe D was having trouble with his heels, so tried to take everything I could get. And I was running as fast as I could over to right center. And when I got there, he was already standing under it. He had a real knack of being able to know where the ball was going to be, I guess. Anyway, when I tried to stop, I hurt my leg. That was the 51 World Series. And then the next year, we played the Dodgers, and we beat the Dodgers. And I can remember that after the last game, Jackie Robinson came in our clubhouse. This is after we had won the series. And he was going around congratulating everybody, telling them nice series. And he came over and patted me on the back, and he said, kid, you're going to be a hell of a player someday. I never will forget that one.
You said losing the 1960 World Series to the Pirates with Mazeroski's dramatic home run was the worst. Why did it hurt more than the other four series you lost?
I felt like that we had a lot better team than the Pirates did that year, and Casey didn't start Whitey. I mean, Whitey's got the best, pitching records in the World Series of anybody, and why he didn't start him, he never did say why, and we could never figure that out. I think Whitey shut him out twice in that series, but he could have won three games, I think, if he would have started, and we never did find out why. But anyway, we scored almost, I think, twice as many runs as they did or something. And Mazeroski, of course, hit that last home run, one, beat us. And I just felt like that we had a better team than they did. When was it, 1962, when the Dodgers beat us four in a row?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had Drysdale and Koufax and Padres. I mean, they had a great pitching staff, and that's what you got to look at. You remember what Yogi said, 90% of baseball is pitching, and the other 30% is mental.
Mickey, also, I don't know that there was a greater collection of players collectively for a longer period of time than the Yankees with all the successes that they had in baseball. But one of the things that I remember as a kid listening to the Yankees over those successful years was the fact that they had a great bench, and I don't know that they ever got the credit for the bench. They had a lot of players on the bench that could have been starters for a lot of other teams.
Oh, yeah. Well, That's the reason, you know, they talk about me playing with bad legs a lot. Hell, I was afraid to get out of the lineup because we had, you know, like Jackie Jensen, Bob Serve, Irv Norn. The guys on our bench were as good as the guys playing, I thought, and you just didn't want to get out of the lineup. You just try to stay in there and keep hitting or doing whatever you was doing to help the team, because if you got out, you might not get back in. And I've always said that, too. You're about the first one I've heard really mention that. But,
yeah.
But we did, and plus, we always had – they used to call us the Bronx Bombers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember a lot of games when we played, like, the Cleveland. Cleveland had a great pitching staff. And Allie Reynolds and Vic Rashie and Whitey Ford would go out and beat them 3-2 or 2-1, 1-0. I mean, we wasn't the Bronx Bombers when we played real good pitching, but we had great pitching in those days, too, and real good defense also.
I remember talking and spending some time with your friend, the late Billy Martin, and we used to talk about the Yankees down in his office. And I asked him about the mystique of wearing a Yankee uniform, and when he talked about it, I could just see in his eyes, Mickey, the love that he had for it. Is today, are you still able to have, if you wear a Yankee uniform, that feeling, or has it been kind of watered down because of the movement of players and just the dynamics that we see in baseball today?
Well, I haven't played for 25 years,
well,
so I
know
don't know
that,
what
but,
the
but
feeling's
you...
like there now. But I've always felt like that family. People ask me a lot, what made the Yankees the Yankees? And I always felt like it was a family-type feeling that we had toward each other. Like when I went up in 51, I was only 19 years old. And Hank Bauer took me in, you know. He was like my big brother, along with Yogi and Allie Reynolds, Vic, and all those guys, you know. Me and Billy and Whitey were like little kids compared to the rest of them. And Casey didn't even have to ball. If we did something that was wrong, I mean, Casey didn't even have to get on us. One of them other guys, one of the big brothers on the team, would grab us and shake us a little bit and say, "Hey, you better straighten up, man. You're messing with our money."
You arrived in New York at the age of 19, as you said, and you struggled at the very beginning. You were sent down to Kansas City, and then you had a chat with your dad. What was it that he said to you?
Well, it wasn't very nice. I called him. I got to striking out a lot, and I lost my confidence. And Casey called me in the office in Detroit. We was on the road, and he had tears in his eyes, and he told me, he said, "Mickey, I'm going to send you back down to the minors. You've lost all your confidence. All you got to do is go down there and start hitting the ball again, and just as soon as you do, we're going to bring you back. But that's the only way you can get your confidence back." So when he sent me down the first time up in Kansas City, I used to be able to drag the ball and get on about any time I wanted to. And I drug a bunt and got on, and the Kansas City manager was George Selkirk. And he called me over after that, and he said, "Hey, Mick, they didn't send you down here. We know you can bunt. They sent you down here to start hitting the ball with power again so you'll get your confidence back and you can go back up there." Well, I went 0 for 22 after that first bunt. And I went in, when we got back to Kansas City, I called my dad. We only lived in Oklahoma, about 150 miles from Kansas City. I called my dad and said, "Dad, this is Mick. I don't feel like I can play baseball." He said, "Where are you at?" And I said, "In the hotel in Kansas City." He said, "Wait right there. I'll be right there." And he came up there, and when he it took him about 2 hours to get up there. And he knocked on the door, and I opened the door, and he just kind of shoved me out of the way, and he pulled my suitcase out and started throwing my clothes. I said, "What are you doing, Dad?" And he said, "Hell, I'm taking you home." He said, "You can go back and work in the mines with me." He said, "I thought I raised a man. You're nothing but a coward." And, I mean, he had tears in his eyes, and he really let me have it. I thought he was going to come up and pat me on the shoulder and said, "Hang in there, kid. You're going to be all right." But that was the farthest thing from what he said.
Well, they always say that if you want to get a donkey's attention, all you have to do is hit him behind between the eyes with a 2x4, and I guess your dad did that as well.
He did, yeah.
In the epilogue of the book, you do talk about your dad a great deal, and you really quite candidly talk about the effect that your dad had and how it might have affected you as far as your drinking. You say, "The turning point for me was when my dad died of Hodgkin's disease during my second season with the Yankees. He was barely 41. If he had lived longer, I don't think the problem was gone as far as it did." And then you write something that I think is very profound. You say, "I couldn't have faced my dad if he knew I was drinking."
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit more about that and how that factored in.
Well, actually, it didn't. My real bad drinking didn't really start until after I was but I did have to retire early. You know, I had that bad leg. I didn't even go and do my, you know, exercises and stuff to get my muscles back. I was just kind of in a fog or something, you know, and it did hurt my game. I know that when my dad died, because he was part of the thing. You know, he used to say the only thing he lived for was baseball and for me to play. He named me after a baseball player, Mickey Cochran. Excuse me. And I've always felt like that if he would have lived longer, that I would have been much better. I know I wouldn't have been over the hill at 33 or 34 years old. And I had to retire when I was 36. So I think it just, I don't know. I kind of lost my throttle or something. I don't know what it was.
I'm Ron Barr, and when we come back, we'll continue with one of our favorite interviews with the late Hall of Famer, Mickey Mano. We continue across the country and around the world with you on Sports Byline.